Finsk film er mange ting. Store enere, vilde dokumentarfilm og nye talenter. Lys og mørke. Vi begynder en programserie, der sætter fokus på finsk film.
Velkommen til Filmnoter. Der har været en tur nordpå til Lapland i Finland for at besøge verdens nordligste filmfestival. Midnight Sun Film Festival. Mit navn er Morten Vejlgaard Just, og jeg blev en sommermåned sendt til Finland i et samarbejde med Finlands Kulturinstitut. Deroppe er der primært skov, nogle af de tusind søer, og så skinner solen døgnet rundt om sommeren, da festivalen er placeret nord for polarcirklen. Men til trods for de ydmyge omgivelser, så har store navne som Francis Ford Coppola og Milos Forman besøgt igennem de nu 29 år, som festivalen i sovebyen Sodankylä har eksisteret. Jeg talte først med festivalens programdirektør, Timo Malmi, der beskriver det helt særlige ved den her finske filmfest.
Well, this is beyond the Arctic Circle. Actually, the municipality of Sodankylä is very large. It's larger than Belgium, so not so large as Denmark, but almost. But there are only 10,000 inhabitants in this municipality. There are more reindeers than lots of more reindeers than inhabitants. And the center of the place is a small village where this film festival is arranged. And it's very nice, intimate place to have such an happening, and it's easy to walk from all those four venues we have, one theater to another, and there are only some restaurants and two hotels, and so it's such a nice place.
So it's a very different festival. It's a very different feeling here if you compare it to the big festival as the Cannes, the Berlinale, where if you want to talk with the big directors, the big movie stars, you have to get past a massive press corps and maybe bodyguards. And here, just last night, I was sitting and drinking a beer in the tent, and Aki Kaurismäki, the big famous Finnish movie director, he just stood beside me and had a drink and a smoke and talked to people. That's very special.
That's the idea, that this is nothing like those big festivals where there are red carpets and gala screenings, but those filmmakers usually are in their hotels or press conferences or making deals with the producers and financiers and have their own parties, etc. But here you are with the audience if you are a film director or actor, so you are in close contact with people all the time, and this makes such a community where we are democratically in a way united, and there are no bodyguards or anything like that, so we are not separated from each other, and that's the idea, to get this togetherness and communication.
How do they react to this? Because if we look at the list of people who have visited during the years, Francis Ford Coppola, Terry Gilliam, Milos Forman, Samuel Fuller, it's really big names. How do they react to this different experience?
Well, they just like it, because elsewhere they don't feel comfortable when they are separated from people, and it's so difficult. But here, for example, Coppola went to the supermarket with the normal people and was there like anybody else, and he enjoyed it. He didn't want anything special for him. The only thing he was curious in advance that there is a desk in his hotel room that he can write his new script. That was all. And he really liked to be here those festival days that he was able to be and celebrated like all the other guests and people here of this festival feeling. And the same thing with the other guests always. Well, somebody comes here expecting a normal big festival feeling, some wives of Hollywood directors want to show their new clothes, but soon they realize that this is not a place like that.
No, it reminds of a music festival, doesn't it? It's quite the same feeling.
Yes, in a way, it's. I don't know if it's rock and roll, maybe more jazz or something in between. One thing is that there's not too much this kind of hullabaloo that you, well, maybe Finns drink a little, that's all right, but anyway, you concentrate on the films anyway and not partying.
And these big names, because it's the biggest names in the world of film, how was it made possible to get them up here? How did you convince them to travel to the top of the world, to one of the smaller societies?
Well, the starting point was that the founders of the festival, like Kaurismäki Brothers and our artistic director Peter von Bach, know so many film people, filmmakers around the world that they were able to ask their friends to come here. And after that has happened, and the reputation of the festival is fine, and they say to their friends again that you should visit the place. So it's easy for us to get anybody here. There is nobody who has said, no, I don't want to come. The only question is with the active filmmakers that they are quite often shooting their new film in this summertime, so you must wait to that the visit can be arranged. Like, for example, with Coppola, we had thought about that visit for a long time, and then it was 2002, just 2 weeks or so before the festival, his secretary called us and said that now Francis Ford is ready to come if you want him. Well, we had to make some arrangements because our schedule was quite ready, our catalogs were ready, and we had to work, but we decided that okay, now it's the time, and we had to work very hard to get all the prints of his films so quickly. That was still the time of real films, 35 millimeter prints, not this digital age we are living now in. But anyway, it was organized and we got Coppola here and everything went fine.
And you mentioned it a bit earlier that that originally the festival was supposed to be at winter time, where it's dark all the time, and now it's opposite. The sun is up all the time, and therefore the name Midnight Sun Film Festival, and it's quite a big part of the experience at the festival. Can you tell me a bit about this?
Yes, this light is very essential because it gives you energy. You can stay awake at night till the morning. We have screenings all over the day, and also for the filmmakers, they get some energy more to be here because they are so enthusiastic about this light. Of course, for a filmmaker, it's something very important when you shoot a film, and sometimes they are dreaming that I make a film here because you can shoot even in the night time, and it's kind of philosophy, this lightness here, lightness of light. also for projecting the film, there goes light through these film frames, and we prefer showing still old kind of 35 millimeter prints of the film if possible. So this old photochemistrical film instead of digital DCP, but of course nowadays most of the films are digital, but we prefer to be the last film festival in the world.
And of course, this is the films. It's the most important thing. But it's also more than just films. It's this event. Just last night, there was this karaoke screening of the Blues Brothers. That's also a very different thing.
Yes, we have all kinds of events, like karaoke screenings. Tonight we will have an old Finnish hit parade film from the 60s, and it's later than it'd be 2 hours later than Blues Brothers was still, and people are a bit crazy for sure at that moment. And it's now weekend, so something can happen. They dance still more in that circus tent. We are having those karaoke screenings. And always the highlight of the festival has been the silent movies accompanied with live music. And yesterday we had Chaplin shorts accompanied with Finnish band called Cleaning Women, and tonight there will be a Swedish classic, Barry Eivind or Hans Hustru, accompanied by the famous Matti Bue ensemble from Stockholm, and so on. And then there are these morning discussions of 2 hours by our boss Peter von Bach, who talks to famous directors about not only of their films but of their lives, etc., etc., and it's very interesting.
Efter min samtale med Timo Malmi gik jeg ned i en af festivalens hyggelige mad- og øltelte, hvor jeg faldt i snak med festivalens direktør over en vaffel. Peter von Bach er netop gået bort, men i live var han et levende filmleksikon, et passioneret filmmenneske og ekspert på Finlands pendant til Lars von Trier, instruktøren Aki Kaurismäki. Peter von Bach og jeg fik os en snak om den kendte instruktør i det, der skulle vise sig at blive et af de sidste interview, Peter von Bach fik givet i denne verden.
He was a young student, not unlike thousands of other students. He was had some loose studies on I think media, on journalism, and then the whole thing was overshadowed by his cinephily, that he was vitally interested about films. He was living and studying, or nominally studying, that was not after all perhaps so serious, so in Tampere, Tammerfors. And he kept coming every day, taking train to Helsinki and seeing films at the Film Archive, which I was running at the time. And He also worked in maybe 20 different professions, lowly professions, washing dishes and things like that. And it's the explanation why he can really tell us about people at work, which is surprisingly rare among filmmakers.
And how does he take this background into his films?
I think it's very decisive that he didn't get into the film school. He applied for film school and didn't get. There was some idiots thought that he's too cynical for that, to become a filmmaker, too cynical. Which is funny because he's the least cynical of filmmakers. But I mean that he's self-educated by seeing films and then partly maybe overhearing things from his brother, elder brother Mika, who made his formal studies in Munich. So Aki probably by following during two films how Mika is working, so he was very fluent with the profession, very professional, and he's really great professional. Without his studies that most people nowadays go, and which are probably fatal for the cinema nowadays, because all films look alike, and Aki's films are different. But it's impressive how, from the very first shots of his first film, which was Crime and Punishment.
Yeah, he started in a very classical way with Dostoevsky and Shakespeare.
Exactly, it was very kind of courageous immediately. Especially, I think Dostoevsky that not even Hitchcock dared to tackle. So he made a very fluent, nice film about it. It's not one of his best. It's a first film, but that is full of talent. But not maybe Calamari Union, which was a kind of very impressive chain of jokes and episodes and very inventive storyline of two gang of youngsters that want to move from one part of Helsinki to another part of, and many die there on the way. It's like being at war. So it was an unlikely film to be made. I mean that it's so intensely personal, and only he in this whole world could have made it. And right here at the Sodankylä Film Festival, it was the film that made a great impression on foreign viewers. I think it might have been the first lead that foreigners take him seriously.
The breakthrough, the Leningrad Cowboys Go America.
Yeah, that Leningrad Cowboys film were a breakthrough maybe in a big way for rather commercial cinemas also. But before that there was a film called Shadows in Paradise, which I think is his third feature film, which is the real breakthrough. It was the first part of the what is later called as a workers' trilogy, losers' trilogy. So it created his great sympathy with underdog, with lowly people who yet have dignity and who in the last analysis are more dignified and more human than many respected members of society.
And then there is the music. Again, the Leningrad Cowboys Go America. And there's just something about the music in his films. What is it with Aki Kaurismäki and the music?
No, he has a very sharp eye about music. And Leningrad Cowboys is, of course, it consists of the things they were playing at the time. And it's full of their hit numbers. And it's actually an exception in Aki's work that there is original music. Because the typical thing for Aki has sooner been to gather the music or choose the music from existing discs. So he has a big stack of discs, and he just kind of chooses them during the mixage of the film, mixing of the film, and it works well. And but his Buñuel did the same, Kubrick did the same. So it's Woody Allen does pretty much the same thing, that he's playing records that exist. So it's one school of doing it. It's playing with associations of the music.
And although he made movies in the UK and France, he has a special thing for Finland, and especially the capital, Helsinki.
Yeah, it's now he's on his way probably to do another film somewhere in Europe, and because Le Havre was so great, so I can't complain. But somehow I miss the testimony of Aki about Finland today. It would be probably very pessimistic, but he's quite unique in the Finnish film, that he both sees things and then he can even see the future. I mean that Hamlet Goes Business, which was made in 1988, was 1 year ahead of the enormous financial crisis. And when banks went down and life really changed things, so that the new Japan, as Finland was called, became suddenly more or less the new Albania.
And what kind of Finland is it that he is portraying in his films?
Helsinki is he has a stranger's view of Helsinki. He's not from Helsinki originally, and he doesn't even now live in Helsinki. He simply sees the essential things, and same thing about Finland. That he's somehow having great capacity, great talent of just showing the essential things.
And it's a very silent and kind of deadpan Finland he's showing.
His films come very near to being silent films. He made one silent film that is probably the last silent feature film of the 20th century, Juha. But other films, especially The Match Factory Girl, don't have more than 30 lines in the film. So little is spoken. So he really kind of illustrates what Bertolt Brecht wrote here in Finland when he was after Denmark. He was in Finland for 1 year before getting to the States, and he said that Finns are a people that is silent in two languages. So Aki, in a way, simply knows that. It's the exact contrary to the typical new Finnish film, where there's talk, kind of television serious talk, small talk, be natural, things like that. Aki is always stylized.
Yeah, now you mentioned the style. It's very distinctive. It's kind of like reading a graphic novel with the strong colors, the green, the gray, the blue.
Yeah, it's the color palette in his hands, and he defines all the time things that should be changed for a wall if it's blue, and then he suddenly comes to the conclusion that it must be green. So it's painted right there. I've seen it a couple of times. So he's creating very concrete, artisan way, kind of handwork, what he's doing.
So there's this very distinctive style. It's a kind of a social realism or social critique in his films. So that's kind of maybe a paradox.
His criticism is very, very discreet, but it's almost with blowing force, because then it's some kind of objective. He shows real relationships, class relationships, what is happening between married people and what is happening in between people in dominant position and then who are kind of in lowly positions. And he has a kind of master's eye to see through these situations. if you think of it, so they are exactly the situation, the basic situation that are not only individual but social. And it's there where the present day Finnish cinema is the weakest. The people simply don't seem to see what is really happening.
Would it be wrong to state that his films are built around the same story? The man who loses his job in I Hired a Contract Killer, the man who loses his memory in The Man Without a Past, and again, a man who loses his job in Drifting Clouds. It's about these poor men.
Yeah, of course. Losers trilogy, or two of them already. That's it, yeah.
Could you elaborate on this archetypical character, this man who loses things? What is it he does with that character?
I think the essential thing is that there is injustice there that he loses. That he's a fair, decent person who then loses the ground of his life. And that alone, that detail makes the society indecent. It's the society that is the big guilty one. But he's never kind of accusing, he's always seeing everybody's reasons, even the antagonists and so on. So it's impressive in the sense that he has the whole equation in front of his camera.
Yeah, like the contract killer in I Hired a Contract Killer. We can understand him.
Yeah, of course.
And we have the poor men, the men who loses their jobs, their memory, but there's also women, very strong women, silent but strong women.
Yeah. The female figures are really admirable in Aki's films. It's Le Havre is obvious, but well, any of the films with Kati Outinen as a strong character. Elina Salo played very strong characters a couple of times. So he really understands women and rather often in a way makes them not only emotional but also kind of ideological leading person of the film, who has the wisdom to try to see the way through in the desperate social situation.
And Aki, he also lost one of his characters, a very dear friend, the actor Matti Pellenpää.
Yeah.
And he made a very emotional tribute to him in Drifting Clouds. Can you tell about that?
Pellenpää, before the shooting started, then Aki, after some hesitation, rethought the film and made the woman protagonist. Gave to Kati Outinen the role of Pellenpää. She's a married woman. The friend of Pellenpää, Väänänen, plays the lead, male lead of the film. And then very, very obviously they have lost a child sometimes in life. And the photo that is shown is Pellenpää as a baby. That's very beautiful.
Det var filmnoter. Julemandens værksted blev besøgt af Morten Vejlgaard Just. Kontakt os på filmnoter@den2radio.dk eller find os på facebook.com/filmnoter. På genhør.
Og serien om finsk film er støttet af Finlands Kulturinstitut.